Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversations. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines. My guest today is James Graham, founder and CEO of Richter Financial Studio. How are you today, James?
I'm doing all right.
It's great to see you. You know, we've met up a couple of times at Digital CPA, and you always have very interesting things to say about how you operate your firm and what you think the accounting profession should and shouldn't be doing.
All right. Well, thanks. I'm glad someone finds them interesting. So,
well, I think more than you think, you think finds you interesting. Now, accounting talent in the U.S. and around the world has been scarce for years. COVID made that much worse.
Right.
What are some ideas you have on how to make things better?
Right. Well, I mean, a few ideas I have around this, and some are a little more solid than others. You know, I think one thing the profession may want to reconsider is the five-year requirement for the CPA. You know, is that getting in the way? Is it really needed? Is it possibly getting in the way of a lot more people getting in, at least at the CPA level of the profession? And then another possible thought I had, just how they've kind of have, there's right now, there's almost different license levels of the CPA. Do they possibly calibrate the education levels, you know, whereas compliance may have a longer, maybe a five-year track, and maybe, you know, kind of the core accounting has a four-year track, and possibly there's some different levels there. So I don't know all that goes into that or what, you know, what would be the trade-offs there, but it's just a loose idea. I'm pretty far removed from taking the CPA, which I'm very happy about.
Me too.
I know stuff. I still remember it. I think another one would be just possibly, you know, some of the organization like the ACPA that's a leader in the space, you know, them possibly doing some sort of PR campaign to really help educate the public about, you know, just how many things you can do with an accounting degree, all the places you can go. And because there's these kind of really goofy old stereotypes that everyone's just sitting there keying away all day and doing nothing else. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, there's so many things. I mean, even in my career, I've done a ton of different things. You know, I've helped a ton of businesses get started. Now I have a much larger firm. I have a firm of 26, and we help innovation companies that are just essentially creating the future. They're aerospace, defense companies, life science companies, and all sorts of AI software and tech, and all these leading innovation companies that are creating all kinds of amazing solutions. Never heard of a lot of these things until our clients told us about their work. So that's just one kind of level. It's kind of prepared me over the years to be a CEO. And so, having a, you know, I'm a little removed from doing the day-to-day work, but how to run a business of 26, you know, we're moving towards 50. And so that's one area, but I've also done work with closing down banks. You know, during the S&L crisis, mm-hmm. we were going in and we were told to not tell anyone we're coming, and we'd show up and close banks, just like has happened recently. Been involved in some fraud investigations, you know, and this is when I was in public accounting with Labenthal and then Deloitte. Different fraud investigations, you know, have located fraud multiple times, you know, even when we're not looking for it. It can also lead to defense related work. And so I have a little bit that I've done in that space. And then also, it can also work, you know, you can also work, for example, it's a really good a door opener, the FBI working at, you know, even Department of Treasury, you know, if there's global sanctions going on about, you know, with rogue states, they want people that are really technically competent. So they're looking for people that are, you know, CPAs and coders and, you know, kind of data analysts, but, you know, CPAs are a big part of you know, people at Treasury, for example. So anyway, those are a couple ideas of just how to make it, you know, how to make it more appealing, you know. And then there's the more mundane things that people are doing of just kind of making sure that, you know, the work situation is flexible. It's not these kind of old school workplaces where, you know, they're kind of where you're just kind of burning people out, and it's just a little bit more flexible work environments. And you have to be able to monitor the productivity in those environments, but also you have to understand it's more than just productivity. And so understanding that dynamic. And then I think another one is, you know, at the firm level, the firms need to be looking at how they can essentially use less labor, you know, how they can use automation and, you know, automation and software solutions and a variety of different, you know, machine learning, AI type solutions. And, you know, and also I'm seeing firms or, you know, outsourcing, you know, to where there's a better match with the type of work and the availability of talent, just because, you know, talent's pretty scarce these days for people that are really, you know, well qualified. So, but those are my thoughts, yeah, on just how some areas we could work to make the, you know, accounting profession a little bit better.
Yeah, and there are so many different things that you can do with an accounting degree. Yeah. And I agree, the AICPA and state societies don't really do a very good job of marketing the variety of work. One small exception is that, you know, here in the Albuquerque area, Netflix has a big studio.
Okay.
And so one of the local universities has set up a program in accounting for movies.
Okay.
And TV shows. So it's it's a specialty.
Right.
And
interesting.
So, yeah. And so I think, yeah, something like that would be really appealing. You know, you get to be on set and you get to hobnob with the celebrities and maybe get a selfie with the stars and see how a movie or a TV series is being made. I think that would be really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ultimately what you're really kind of pointing to is that that's a one example, but there's tons of examples of industries you can get into. And, you know, often, you know, it's not uncommon that people work their way up and CFOs are end up being the CEOs. And so you can, you know, some people are getting into, you know, the wine industry, you know, running breweries, brewery bars, doing, you know, just pretty much any industry out there that's interesting, you know, having the accounting, finance, business knowledge of how the business operates. Is a really key part of what their success is. And so the key, you know, once you get on the inside, you learn an industry and you become part of that industry. And so there's all sorts of avenues and all these different industries as a result. So yeah, it's a great gateway. Right. You got to get that PR campaign going.
That's right. Well, we'll try to do our bit by this conversation.
Yeah. All right.
Now, one thing that hasn't really changed in accounting until recently was just the overall business model. Many firms have been using the billable hour and operating with these very strict hierarchical structures. But we're beginning to see some firms doing different things. I mean, you're the CEO of your firm. You're not the managing partner. So that in itself is a little bit of a change. What are some of the changes that you are seeing and the things that you're doing in your firm?
Right. Well, we're doing a lot of things now. You know, if you talk about the billable hour, we gave that up 10 to 15 years ago. And so we haven't done it for a long time. And in fact, we refuse to do it. We've had a couple times where people want to say, well, how much is it an hour? You know, no, I want to work by the hour. Well, we won't do it. Well, c'est la vie, you know, it's not a fit. And the reason is there's some people that have, you know, some really knowledgeable people in the space that have just, you know, have talked at conferences about it for a while, and they just have pretty compelling arguments. But, you know, for me, the thing that makes the most difference is, one is it really changes the nature of your relationship with the client. Because if people, yes. The client is always going to be looking at the clock, they're always going to be just, you're going to have that dollar per hour in the moment, always hanging over any interaction. And once you take that off the table, it allows everyone to move forward better, because the focus is on running the business. And so if you take the philosophy that your client's always going to know without surprises what the costs are up front, then that makes it a lot more, just makes a better fit in terms of relationships. So we spend more time up front making sure we have true alignment with what our clients' needs are, and we scope it based upon experience. And yeah, it's a little scary. You have to kind of make a bit of a guess sometimes, but you also can put parameters in there to kind of, you know, put some guardrails into how it's structured. But it just, we actually, you know, unlike what some of the, you know, kind of these gurus that talk about the hourly rate, we actually track time because we want insight into project profitability. So we're also trying to get that feedback, you know, if we're really going off on a particular engagement and really starting to lose money, or it also can help spot outliers in terms of areas that are profitable, et cetera. But we try to make it kind of lightweight, and we're using it for information purposes, the time, as opposed to for billing purposes. It's just a very different relationship. And I think people just really appreciate working with that clients. So
I applaud you for getting rid of the billable hour a long time ago, because you know, even when I was in public accounting, I could see that these billable hours and WIP, all of that was in many ways kind of meaningless, because the partners would bill what they were going to bill. And if they were going to bill $800 for a piece of work, then it really didn't matter if there was $500 worth of WIP in it or $1,200.
Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I really didn't get why we were tracking our time so carefully.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you know, we, like I said, we use it for information purposes, but we're not nitpicking people, or, you know, we're just trying to understand broad trends, and it's really helpful for that, for giving us that insight. Yeah. So on the other hand, you know, if you do work hourly and give people this itemized bill, it almost just encourages a client to start poking away at it. You know, oh, is this, you know, if your description isn't good enough, you know, and it just drags the quality of the relationship down, you know, sometimes into the mud. And, you know, so if you want elevated client relationships, you know, moving away from the transactional into advisory and collaboration, you got to take some of these things out that are kind of dragging, you know, can drag the relationship down, like, you know, surprises they weren't expecting, et cetera. So.
I agree. And it makes the relationship, I think, much more easeful.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then I think, yeah, you asked what other changes, you know, are seeing out there. You know, obviously there's one big trend is a lot of companies are increasingly outsourcing what they insource, you know, so there's in the CAS client advisory service space, there's more opportunity increasingly over time, because companies are getting more accepting of just dealing with their core competency in-house and outsourcing, you know, areas where there's expertise, and not trying to manage an accounting department, for example. And so we work with some pretty good sized companies, you know, that historically probably wouldn't have, you know, 100 employees, let's say. And whereas, you know, we're the main accounting finance machine on the back, you know, and on the back end of what they're doing. And, you know, we may collaborate with a couple of people internally, but historically, a lot of these firms would have just kept it all in-house. And it wasn't so easy to outsource before we're getting very digital. And so, you know, bandwidth is increasing, software capabilities, and, you know, a lot of things are making it just much more doable, you know, everyone being in the cloud and everything. So, and then I think two other big trends I see is, one is that companies are getting much more multi-state and international. A lot of the software and people are, COVID did it, and they're just going all over the world. So we work with clients, you know, throughout the world, quite literally. Time zones are still an issue, so we didn't get rid of that. But, you can work pretty effectively at distance if you have the right collaboration and right technology and setup. Another big trend I see is that there's software firms, I call them kind of non-professional, not that they're unprofessional, but they're non-professional firms getting into accounting, finance space, as well as, people coming from overseas and trying to deliver services here in the US. And so those are some kind of increasing trends, whereas a lot of the big tech companies used to be software focused, and they're starting to backstop that with people on the back end. So they're kind of providing a combination of technology plus accounting, you know, for example, Intuit. And I mean, there's been a lot of attempts and H&R Block and some of these others, and there's been a lot of attempts, and generally they're on the lighter side of, you know, it's pretty unsophisticated, a lot of what we've seen at least so far in terms of the work that's actually done. And it's, you know, once it gets into some complexity like job costing, rule accounting, and so forth, it falls down, or anything special like, revenue recognition, lease accounting, doing anything with sophistication, I haven't seen it yet out there in we'll just call them kind of mass tech solutions that are out there.
So. Right. Yeah. I think that those probably work well if it's really just a matter of collecting the bank feeds and classifying things and making sure that all the payments are going in, all the expenses are going out, and you're classifying things correctly.
Yeah.
But when you get into more advanced accrual and really gap accounting, that's where it gets a little trickier.
Yeah. I'm guessing over time they'll increasingly, you know, their sophistication levels will get, you know, as they figure it out, as, you know, AI is getting smarter and smarter, and, you know, more and more some of this stuff will get figured out. So that's why good to have strategies that will keep you from trying to compete with some of these things that are these super well funded, you know, $100 million startups that don't have to make money for
that's right. Years. So, that's right.
Yeah.
Wish we could all be that lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what about growth?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you mentioned that you're a 26 firm moving towards 50.
Uh-huh.
And so that's interesting. Are you doing this because you see that there's a need for the services, or because you just want to be bigger?
Right. Bigger's better, right? No. Okay. So first of all, I think, kind of the core of this is really, you know, what's the value? What does growth do for a firm? And one of the things that I really like about growth is it creates opportunity for our team. You know, if we're growing, we're creating new positions, we're creating opportunities for people to move up. And a lot of firms that are kind of not growing, people, you know, good people leave because they realize someone is in the seat ahead of them and that person isn't going anywhere for 10 years or, or 5 years. And so that's one of the real pluses of growth. But yeah, we're trying to grow because a couple of things. We have some ideas on our verticals of how we want to build out our capabilities and how we can best meet those capabilities. And so, you know, trying to work with larger firms, trying to work with, you know, some more sophisticated, more complexity. It allows us to have people that are specialists in different areas, because as you get bigger, you're not just keeping the same structure, you're right. Adding on certain different types of skill sets. You know, at a certain point, you can add on, you know, an operations manager, you can add on assistant to that operations manager, you can hire someone that focuses on technology, another person that you can start specializing within the group, having people focused on just payroll and compliance and tax, you know, what have you. But it allows you to start doing some structuring organizationally that can be really helpful to be really efficient and functional as an organization. The other thing about growth is it can allow you to operate in a different place in the marketplace. So it's really hard for a solopreneur to be servicing, you know, a big company, for example. But
right.
when you have a team and you have the expertise and so forth, you can work with bigger companies. And so one of the things I've tried to do with positioning us well is that you kind of like really like the idea of the blue ocean concept. So it's kind of a little bit of my North Star, so to speak. And ironically, our firm is Richter.io. And I think that means Indian Ocean is, you know, it's the URL for the Indian Ocean and people actually use it. But that was just pure coincidence. But the idea of Blue Ocean is you're trying to find places in the market where there's opportunities that you can distinguish yourselves and where there's good opportunities for quality clients. And I think it's at the beginning, you know, small organizations, they have a hard time paying for it. They tend to they can't often afford what they really need. Even if what you do is good, they can't afford it. So you can find your way into different specialties. You can find your way into the scale of the market that can really afford what they really need. And, you know, there's true collaboration and also the need for greater services. So anyway, that's a bit of, you know, what we've tried to do in terms of our growth path. And it also makes it more interesting for people. You know, our team likes it when if they're feeling too busy sometimes, then they may not like it for a little bit, but they really like that we're adding new clients and that we're moving forward. And so it creates, you know, an attraction quality, you know, when we're hiring people, people are really interested in firms that are growing as opposed to stagnating or going backwards. And so I think it can really help from a team perspective. So.
I like what you said at the beginning about creating different positions. You just can't do that with a small firm.
Right.
But when you grow to a certain point, then you can break up the old standard org chart, and instead of having a senior staff, you can say, well, hey, you know, you're really good with technology, and so we want you to be the technology expert.
Yeah.
Or you're really good at figuring out systems, so we want you to be in charge of operations. And that is something that the smaller firms really are lacking.
Yeah.
And I think that variety of positions is something that can help keep people in the profession longer. Yeah. because they're not just looking at, well, you know, if I stick around another 5 or 10 years, you know, doing the same thing, you know, maybe then I will get to be the partner. Oh boy.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's great. And making it more exciting, plus the ability to really enter an industry deeply and find the big clients that you can serve well and who can pay for your services and who want to pay for your services.
We do a lot. On the flip side, when we work with clients, we do a lot of financial forecasting, and so we're helping them plan for their growth. You know, in a sense, what you're doing over time is you're adding new positions, and you need to make sure you're adding the right positions in the right order. And some of it is, you know, maybe your core competency, you're like an engineering firm or something, you're adding different types of engineers or programmers or what have you. But at a certain point, you have to add in certain other capabilities. And so that's what, you know, forecasting can be really helpful for, whether it's within your firm or for clients, helping them in their journey.
Yes. With the forecasting, they can really see that, you know, if we pull this lever in our financials, in our business model, then that has these impacts over here.
Yep.
So at this point, well, maybe we will need to hire somebody and we will have the financial capacity to fund that position.
Right. Yep.
So.
Exactly. And one tiny add-on is a lot of what we're doing these days with all the technology is complicated. And it's really hard to keep up on everything, all the different technology that's going out there, and just have one to be a solopreneur doing all that, mastering all that technology, all those licenses, you know, searching for new technology and on top of doing the work. So scale allows, you know, a little bit more saneness in terms of the management of all the technology. So.
Absolutely. Now, back when you and I started out as accountants, you had to be really good with a 10 key. But thanks to bank feeds, we don't really have to do that too much anymore.
Yeah.
Now, what skills do accountants need to be successful today and in the future?
Right. Well, I think, you know, it's a kind of a mix of hard and soft skills, you know, and maybe I'll just start with the soft skills because those are often overlooked. And actually, they're sometimes pretty lacking when people are getting started in their career because they don't realize how important they are. But, you know, effective communication is one. It's just not just kind of communicating what's on your mind just because you want to spout it out, but more just being, how are you effectively considering other people and what needs to be done and how do you communicate at the right level? And so that's one. Also, just trying to really employ common sense in the big picture, you know, just understanding what you're doing in your role. I mean, I remember like way back in the day when I was getting my audit training with the first firm I was with in Chicago, Laventhal, they told a story of, you know, they're trying to essentially teach us the same thing. They said, don't be track tappers. And so what it was is people back in the day used to go along with hammers along the rails and, you know, and kind of bang the rails a little bit. And they, you know, one of the supervisors came up to the people and said, what are you doing? Well, we're tapping the tracks, you know, like, but why? We don't know. But in a sense, the purpose of what they were, you know, should have known, you know, it may have been a supervision thing because they may not have been told or they may not have cared and paid attention, but really understanding what the purpose of what you're doing is, you're trying to prevent, you know, trains from crashing and, you know, but it's, you know, we all do this at different times. So we don't get the big picture the way we should. And so developing those, I don't know, those empathy, you know, kind of client experience, if you're dealing with clients, really thinking of it from their side, like, okay, I want to send this email, but how's it going to be received on their side? So almost starting, what do they need to hear? What do my employees need to hear? What's lacking right now? And just trying as much as possible to think about, the completeness of the story and how to communicate it. What do other people need out there? And then another one where I think accounting has a real plus is I think, just developing a real a solid skill set. Some people might choose between a general business degree in accounting, but I think it really does help to have a pretty solid skill set that could be really, that almost dives a little bit deeper. It's great to have general knowledge, but it's almost easier to obtain over time as opposed to, really solid technical knowledge. And then I think, in terms of learning, generally it's kind of stated a lot. You just keep learning, and particularly areas that are interesting, And so hopefully people like the areas they're in. So like I love economics, for example, and I'm always just listening to, I listen quite literally to probably an hour a day of podcasts about economics as I'm moving about and so forth. It really helps inform the work we do just because it's explaining the dynamics of what's going on in the economy and business and so forth. And so, I don't know, having that curiosity and, and I think the other is I'd really, right now there's in a lot of circles, there's this real, I call it an epidemic of mediocrity and malaise out there. Just so many people are just feel victimized, hard done by, just don't want to work, figuring out how they can get by with less. And I just don't think, we've moved to this remote work situation, which can be have some real pluses for people. But at the same time, in theory, if everyone's getting what they want and didn't have, we should have this great increase in happiness. And I'm not seeing a massive increase in influx of happiness, in terms of where people are at in their satisfaction about life and et cetera. And it's more complex. There's lots of factors out there. There's climate change and there's all sorts of things affecting people's, where people are at and rightfully so, the economy and, wars and everything. But yeah, I think, just for people to really engage and learn and, try to contribute and try to help outcomes and help other people and, mentoring other people, et cetera, can go a long way. So.
Well, you put a lot of really good ideas out there. And, what are some things that you have done concretely in your firm that have really made your firm a more interesting place, more satisfying place to work?
Right. Well, one thing we've done, we're in multiple locations. So I'm in Boulder, Colorado now. We have a small office in Denver. We have another office in San Diego, person in the Bay. We have people in Virginia, Georgia. And so we've had to put a lot of work into trying to keep team and culture. It's one thing when everyone is in one office and, everyone's in the office and you're kind of connecting. It's so much easier in some way, but you almost have to be very intentional of how you build team and culture. And so it was a fall before last, we got our whole team together on an island in San Diego. For a full team get together. So that was a little bit of a team building, and we, worked on refining our vision, mission, and values together. And also just had some nice quality time and also worked on, kind of personality, communication styles and so forth. So that's one thing that we've done. And then another thing we've done is just tried to be really promote, diversity, equity, and inclusion within our firm in terms of how we operate. We have this kind of amazing, it's like we're almost a little UN here, wherever we're at, I shouldn't say here. But, we have people with, you know, different age groups. We have people, you know, I have two partners. I'm the CEO founder, but I have two partners who are women. You know, one originally came from, you know, she's originally from Poland. We have a number of people, you know, a number of different religious people, you know, people represented. We, you know, we have LGBTQ representation on our team. You know, just also, you know, it's pretty, you know, multiracial. So, you know, it's a really big mix. And so a bunch of that is two things. One is just being really open, because I think historically a lot of firms, and you'll still see it, you go and, you know, everyone is, fits some certain profile, you know, whatever the model of the person choosing is, that's the profile. But, you know, just being really open to, you know, people and who they are and the in their possibilities. And I think that there's two things that can happen. One is, you can get some really great qualified people that you're going to otherwise ignore. And that's not a smart thing to do in this environment.
Right.
And then the other is you can get clients that relate to, you know, who you are as a firm as a result. You know, it's possible we'll lose some, but, you know, I won't lose sleep over that.
No, I wouldn't.
But yeah, so anyway, so that's one thing we've done as a firm, is just tried to build team, even though we're at distance and it's harder than ever with all the remoteness. And I mean, we're connecting all the time on Zoom, but yeah, just trying to, and I want to increasingly look at how we can keep our team and our culture, even though it's going to be different at distance. I guess one other thing we do is we try to bring our, you know, our team along in terms of training and, you know, kind of providing education about just different things. We work with innovation companies, so we're sharing a lot of information about what's happening, you know. So like about a month or two ago, I was showing them ChatGPT and just encouraging them, which is kind of an AI, you know, everyone's heard about it, I think, now. Mm-hmm. Hardly anyone had heard about it right at the time. And so, yeah, and kind of encouraging them to use it a bit, you know, not to just not check it, but, you know, as a tool. And we're constantly just talking about technology and just, you know, and providing training for our team on, you know, technical skills and trying to do, you know, one-on-one mentoring on certain, giving people feedback and so forth. So trying to develop our team as we grow too. So
that all just sounds like a progressive kind of firm. And as the CEO of another tech company I've done some work for, put it, you're encouraging people to become better human beings.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's maybe been missing from a lot of the traditional firms, that the purpose was to bring in more revenue, so that the people at the top can get more money and get their RVs or their yachts or planes whatever, second homes. And those things are not bad.
Yeah.
But when it's at the expense of helping your team develop to become better humans, then I think you're really missing the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it's something, you know, it's something we've worked hard to do, but it's also something I want to double down on, just because I agree. I think it's really important. You know, we're only here for so long, and ideally we'll enjoy the people we're around, the work we're doing, the clients we're working with as much as possible, and to try to constantly be working on those areas. But I think we've done a reasonable job of it, but I know we can do better. So that's actually one of the initiatives we're working on, is just to try to, you know, figure out how to even more effectively kind of bring our team along in terms of training and mentoring and so forth. It's a work in process.
Well, at least you recognize that it takes effort and intention. It's not just something that will happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, what are some things that you think accountants should stop doing immediately?
Right. Well, I mean, I think one of them we've already really touched on, is getting away from the hourly billing. You know, it's just for a lot of reasons, it's just it degrades your client relationship, and it's just not a fun way to work. It's just actually painful to think of doing it back when we used to do it. And I guess another one is really stop focusing on just transactional and advisory and kind of almost call it like lower end work, so to speak. And just to really, you know, it may be an important part of your package of what you're doing, but really trying to focus on what true needs are of clients. What can you do to really help them grow as an organization? And if you think about it from their, perspective, what do they fully need? Like if it's a tax firm, what about looking at everything they need from a tax perspective? So I just see a lot of firms that are tax firms are just doing the tax prep. They're so busy with tax prep. It's so easy. You just turn the crank. And, by the time they're caught up with all the stuff that didn't get done, here's the next, maybe a little break and some CPE, and here comes the next tax season. And so, I think more progressive firms are putting packages together where they look at what the clients need throughout the year. They create, there's MRR or monthly recurring revenue they build in. It's like they want clients that are going to not just create this big, it's like a, anaconda eating a water buffalo or something, this big thing going through. And during a short period, they spread it out over the year. They have a fixed price agreement, subject to certain parameters. If you need to, you add special projects on, but they're doing the estimated taxes, for example. They build in tax planning at the appropriate times of year. They're, perhaps doing some pre-work. So as much as possible, so the books are up to date. They're doing the actual tax prep. And then, they may tie that in with financial planning or just some more holistic work like that, because a lot of people that need tax prep, need tax planning, need financial plan, Yes. So there's a lot of places you can go depending upon your firm, but so many are just, they can get by with just turning the crank. That horse is done whimpering. So I should let it go. That's it. And I think really looking for true unmet needs, I think that's what I would be looking for, and there's a lot of ways to do that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've talked about all the different things that firm owners can do, but they are constrained from doing a lot of that.
Yeah.
Because they're just cranking the wheel.
Yeah.
What do you think, besides just not being willing, not being able to get off of that hamster wheel, what are some things that keep accountants from making those changes?
Well, I mean, so much of it you touched on earlier, Liz, is that legacy firm mindset. It's just the way, that's the way my grandpappy did it, it's just the way it's always been done. It's that formula that's based upon, the partner and, billable hours and, there's not much joy in it. And, it's kind of these real rigid steps and so forth. And so I think reassessing, how a firm is structured and, just relationships within the firm. I think another big block to change is, I think change takes, change doesn't happen. Well, change happens all the time, whether we like it or not. But I think,
yes,
a lot of change, as you were talking about before, takes intent and effort. Good change often takes intent and effort. And so, I think that's about it. I think people often get just caught up in the here and now, and they're just kind of caught, they're kind of caught up in emails and putting out fires, and they're not, kind of putting that strategic time away. There's the classic, you need to spend time working on the firm, not just in your firm. And so they're failing to really carve that time out in different ways, whether it's, a little bit each day to plan the day, in terms of what true priorities are, or they're planning the week, or, planning retreats and planning collaborations with others on the team, et cetera. And I think also it's just, a little bit of a failure to set priorities sometimes. Like one of the things everyone on my team knows about, the ants and the elephants. And I don't know if that's something that you're familiar with, but, there's, in terms of assessing what's important out there, there's, the elephants are what are things that are truly important. Ants, elephants are really important. If there's a charging elephant or a marching elephant, you want to pay attention, and then there's the other thing is like, what is the level of the stated level of urgency? They can either be charging or they can be marching, and so everyone gets how important a charging elephant is. It's very visceral. You got to get out of the way. Most people get, I got to pay attention to that. But sometimes it's easy to forget the marching elephants, things that are really important, but they're not immediate. They're kind of creeping up on us. And so we have to have a way to kind of address, not to forget the marching elephants. That's what a lot of people do it. Their CPE or something gets behind, or there's a lot of them.
Right.
But client relationships can slip as we're kind of focusing on the deadline. And then the other one, everyone gets that a marching ant isn't that important, so they ignore it. But sometimes they also get distracted by charging ants, things that have a false sense of urgency, but they're like, they're in your face. We've all had clients like that. And so you got to recognize when there's a charging ant out there that you got to not give it false sets of urgency just because it's yelling at you. So anyway, people, that's just, there's others, but, these little ways you have to structure to be effective in terms of your use of time, in terms of, setting priorities, setting goals, setting long-term strategic goals for your firm in terms of, you have to break it down. There's a lot of ways to do it, but not forgetting to do that. And then I guess another key one would be to, just make sure you have the right priorities in front of you, because your time's limited. So one thing that is truly limited, doesn't matter how much money we have, or as we know, we only have so much time. So we have to be really smart on just how we use it. So anyway, those are, kind of on the theme of, blocks to change, blocks, not to be confused with blocks change, but blockages to change. those are some ideas.
Those are all things that I think many firm owners could think about. If they feel a little bit stuck. They could try some of those things, especially just taking a little bit of time to work on your firm and not just solely in your firm.
Appreciating technology, appreciating, just all, being open to where the possibilities are, even if it's not comfortable, it's not comfortable. And you sometimes have to do what's uncomfortable just to, to make the right long-term decision for you as well as your team. So.
Oh, absolutely. Now I want you to kind of get out your crystal ball and think about what will be the big thing in the future. Client accounting services is really big now. What do you think will be the next big thing.
Right. Well, I think there's, my crystal ball just came back from the shop, so you're in luck. it's been broken for a bit, but they just got to move on it. So there's a lot of things happening right now. You know, I think I touched on before, I'm just seeing increasing openness of more and more of accounting positions being outsourced, bigger and bigger companies that are looking to do that right away. When we were first doing it, it was pretty, you know, it was only people were doing it because they knew they couldn't have someone in-house, you know, and it was a much harder sell, you know, way back when I was getting started. Now people that can easily have someone in-house realize it's not the right choice in their context. They're not going to get the expertise. They're not going to get a full team that can address everything from bookkeeping to CFO. And yet, you know, if they just get a CFO, you know, they are having that CFO now, that CFO now is doing bookkeeping with half their time. So yeah, just recognizing there's a lot more possibilities there. So I think that's a big trend. I think AI and automation are just forces that are just going to continue marching. And so it's something we as a profession need to really work to harness, not fight, but recognize, mm-hmm. you know, there's, you know, the day of the Luddite is over. We got to really just really, you know, look at how we can use these solutions to be more efficient, more effective, you know, to be able to do things we couldn't do over, you know, do in the past, you know, that bring more capabilities of what we can do. And I think another one, I think that trend, I mentioned it before also, is just more non-professional firms are getting into the mm-hmm. professional services space. You know, whether it's whether it's SaaS solutions with, you know, adding employees behind it, you know, like H&R Block and, you know, Intuit are doing, or if it's, you know, overseas doing almost the same to the US using that, you know, the labor differential as a benefit. And so anyway, so that's a big force. I think there's, you know, as a result of that, I think for people that are servicing clients, there's an increasing need for specialization, because if you're trying to compete against that, you know, that's not a good place to be. You know, it's just, it was John Henry and the steam shovel, you know?
Yes.
just, you know, it doesn't amaze how amazing he was. It's hard to beat a steam shovel, you know, at a certain point. So you want to think, okay, maybe I need to be a steam shovel operator.
Right.
Or have a fleet of steam shovels. So anyway, mm-hmm. so yeah, just trying to specialize in different ways to distinguish yourself. And there's a lot of ways to do that. And, you know, and part of it is there is, you know, a whole bunch of new opportunities emerging. So that provides new opportunities to do that. You know, there's, you know, I mentioned AI, there's a lot of different AI type firms. We have a bunch of firms in the AI space. There's crypto and blockchain is another area. There's the cannabis space that, you know, I see some firms are getting into. There's e-commerce is a big area, and that's going to just continue to grow as we, you know, there's a lot of unmet needs out there. There's, you know, demographics are going to be changing. And so yes. Healthcare is a huge area of need. And so there's a lot of unmet needs out there. And then I think another one is just traditional areas where there's just like managing manufacturing and inventory and so forth. There's because of the complexity, I think there's huge opportunities for people that specialize there. And so even though it's not new, so to speak, I don't know if it's a new thing, but it's an opportunity that's just sitting there for people. And I guess as long as I'm just, my crystal ball still working, it's getting a little fuzzier, but you know, the whole realm of, you know, ESG or environmental social and governmental issues, you know, for example, accounting for carbon credits. You know, I think at the, I think it was at the AICPA conference I was at, or the Woodard conference recently, I saw, you know, a firm that has software that really is specializing in carbon credits. And so, you know, just some of these new emerging areas are, you know, are just opportunities, or even just totally sort of related. What is it like, you know, the, you know, there's podcasts, and therefore you can do accounting podcasts on, and get CPE through that. So that's, you know, that's an emerging opportunity. That wasn't a real option 10 years ago. No. And so it's just recognizing, hey, there's a need. I can fill that need, and I'm actually interested in that need. So I can get CPE.
It's pretty cool. And, you know, the things you mention are things that were not even approached, not even introduced to me when I was finishing up my accounting degree.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I haven't been an accountant as long as you. You know, accounting was a second or third or fourth career for me.
Right. Yep.
But you know, these things that you've put out are just so exciting.
Yeah.
There's so many opportunities out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people get, you know, afraid of the technology, you know, like thinking AI is going to eat my lunch.
No.
And it may be able to describe your lunch, but at least not yet. It's not going to eat it. But there, you know, the key is, yeah, it's a classic thing where there's opportunity, where there's opportunity, where there's unmet needs. And there's so many opportunities. You just have to a little bit think and try to understand, you know, having experience and looking around can help a bit more, but there's loads of possibilities, and you just have to align, you know, align what really lights you up, because you do best the things that you're passionate about, and try to align with the types of businesses and needs and this, you know, the service that really kind of resonates. And hopefully it pays decently too.
Paying well is always good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a perfect way to wrap things up, that there are opportunities everywhere.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much, James, for taking the time to talk to me. If listeners want to connect with you, what's the best place to find you?
Right. I think a few things. I don't know if I can give you a slide. You could put it at the end of the podcast. But that's one idea. I'm on LinkedIn. So it's James P. Graham. And I'm in Boulder, Boulder, Denver. Another is my email, James G, like grape, at Richter, RICHTR.io. And we also have a website out there, www.richtr.io. So those are a few. If you have Carrier Pigeon, give that a try, because that might be
my work.
Or look for it outside the window. And just,
All right.
Well, edit that part out.
Well, thank you so much, James. And I hope you have a wonderful day. And I look forward to meeting you again at the next Digital CPA.
Sounds good. I'll be there. I haven't signed up yet, but I'm going to do that shortly. So, all right. See you in December, if not before. All right.
All right.
Take care.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.